Today's discussion will be waiting for Congress to act. 10 must-do estate planning strategies while we wait. How opportune it is that this afternoon we're hearing that President Trump will be releasing his plan to overhaul the tax code today. The plan calls for reducing corporate tax, as was leaked to the press, from 35% to 15%, and to simplify the individual tax rates, resulting in lost revenue not being replaced except for potential economic growth. So the struggle here is, if this is not tax neutral, what are we working with? And the answer, under the typical trickle-down theory, is that with this extra cash, we'll spur on the economy, which will lead to more growth and revenue and more taxes. It remains to be seen if that plan, in fact, does work. But before we can even get to that, the question is, will it get through Congress? So, number one, Senate Finance Committee Chair Orrin Hatch says that the 50% target is unattainable, 15% individual rates is unattainable. House Speaker Ryan, on the contrary, wants 20% for corporate tax as opposed to 35%. And Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Kevin Brady, says that any tax reform has to be revenue neutral, and the tax reform project is a year-long effort. None of those things should come as a giant light bulb and surprise. We have seen how difficult it is to push through any changes in Congress. And there are certainly enough battles that President Trump is up against right now, irrespective of which side of the aisle that you are on. So that allows us to segue into what will happen and what how that connects to what we will do with respect to estate tax. Up to now, none of this discussion on this call has anything to do with estate tax. The whispers and the leaks are all about income tax, individual income tax, and corporate tax. So, but given the incoming administration's other proclaimed priorities, including the repeal of Obamacare, the minimization of illegal immigration, increases in defense spending, and infrastructure improvements, there are already questions about the feasibility of adopting any one or more of the proposed tax initiatives. There is much uncertainty about particular aspects of this Republican tax proposal, including a replacement tax on the wealthy, and there's already concern about the likely impermanence of any new legislation, a point that we have said all along. And again, not necessarily making a political statement at all, but the practical reality is that the group that received the majority vote, popular vote, not only wanted the estate tax, which is at the exemption, which is at $5.49 million in 2017, to stay where it is as opposed to evaporate or increase, they wanted it to be reduced to $3.5 million. So is that only 42, 43 months away with a potentially new candidate if President Trump is a one-term president? All things that we have to be respectful of when we're dealing with less than 1% of the population right now is already paying the tax. What kind of political momentum can the Democrats get when they could wind up at some point in the future going forward trying to convince the, quote, bottom 99% that there should be any further estate tax relief? How do they convince them at that point? So today the view is, what should we be doing in this period of uncertainty? What we think is most important here is to be assertive. And I'm glad you're listening in, because we do review these as must-do strategies. So number one is continue to make annual exclusion gifts. In the past, Congress has avoided taking action to repeal the gift tax, and so it prevents individuals from shifting assets to create this loophole to minimize the tax. What is the annual exclusion gift? Well, right now, it's $14,000 times two is 28. And to contribute these to your adult children, contribute these to trust for your grandchildren, if you have family members of more modest means, the 529 plans are valuable. If you are completely certain that this money will be used to pay for education, and that there are no other assets that you would use to pay for education. So for a client of more significant means, grandparents or even parents, they would otherwise be paying for education, high school, college, and graduate, and that would serve to reduce the size of their estate. So the 529s may not have the same power. If they were to make their annual exemption gifts of $14,000 a year times two, 28 for married couples, into a trust for that child, then when the child's in college and graduates and married or in a life relationship or buying a home or starting a business, the money that was building up in the war chest of the trust from the annual exemption gifts can then be used at that time. So our most efficient clients are saying, no 529s, do $28,000 a year for each of our children, put it into trust. We'll pay the annual income tax on that because the trust is a grantor trust, and that money will grow and compound, and at some point in the future, our children and grandchildren will allow them to serve as a co-trustee with us and then on as their own trustee. We will recommend inside those trust folks that those trusts are for your children and grandchildren's lifetime. No mandatory distributions at 25, 30, or 35. Yes, if the child or grandchild needs it, of course distribute it out. Maybe even make loans from the trust. But if there is no need, do not have that money roll out of the trust at 30 and then roll into a vulnerable situation. Car accidents, reversals in your children's lives, divorces, economic strife, the money inside the trust should be protected for your child's, your grandchild's lifetime, especially if your child has, the gift that you have, the ability to be extremely, prudent and intelligent with your investments and your, ability to earn. And so this money in the trust should not wind up adding to your child's estate. It should remain in a trust and continue to be protected, and would go down to the next generation if your child passes away, and can do that estate tax-free. So keep the $14,000 gifts coming. If you don't make a gift in 2017 and 2018 rolls along, surprise, you only get one gift in 2018. This is not something that is compounding. This is not a cumulative opportunity. So number one, know that you do it or you lose it. Number two, it is early enough in the year to make the gift and see compounding of that gift before the end of the year if the markets and your investment choices cooperate. So it's always better to make the gift at the beginning part of the year and let the full year of growth take place. If you had 2012, we were up over 30% on the big board. Imagine $15,000, $28,000 at 30%. You're almost looking at $9,000 of growth on that $28,000 that would have been taken advantage of during that year when the markets were strong. If you made the gift at the end of the year, you would have missed out on that growth. So keep the annual gifts coming. Put them into trust for your children and grandchildren. Don't have mandatory distributions from the trust. Allow your grandchildren to serve as trustees going down the road. pick up the income tax on the trust so that it compounds at a quicker rate, and you pay the tax because it's a grantor trust. Always have the ability to remove your child and grandchild as a trustee if there is a need. And now we've got ourselves wonderful assets that are compounding and growing for the benefit of your children and grandchildren. Number two, lifetime exemption gifts. For the same reason, you have a $5.49 million lifetime exemption gift that should be utilized. So there are multiple ways to do this, but for sure, back in 2012, another great year, at the end of 2011, many of you took the exemption amount and you were concerned about where the estate tax was going in the following year, justifiably, because we were told the exemption was going to go back to $1 million from five. So you overloaded that $5 million opportunity and put the $5 million into trust, naming your spouse as the primary beneficiary and then down to your children and grandchildren. It turned out that there wasn't that race to do that. But again, in 2012, the market was up over 30% or near to that year. So people that had $5 million in trust, very fortunately, wound up having $6-plus million in that trust by the end of the year. Those that did not do the trust, wound up having $6 million out of their estate, and a year later, if they created in their estate, and a year later, when they wanted to make a trust with the $5 million, that extra million was not able to go in because they were maxed out. So what is the lesson? The lesson is that when you maximize your exemptions, you're going to also see growth. Too often we'll meet with clients of maybe the more modest means that are only $1 or $2 million over the exemption amount. With a husband and wife, that would be 10. If the exemption amount now is 11, combined they're at 12 or 13. And they're saying, do we really need to worry about that? Well, the answer is, in 10 years, that 11 now goes to 20, and now that whole piece above the exemption is now taxable if you hadn't put it into trust, and tax-free if you did. So it's not necessarily today about whether or not you have a significant estate tax, but where the growth is. Now, some of you will say, but if Trump, Mr. McManus, increases the death exemption, then we could find ourselves giving more. And I would say that's like hearing that a hurricane is coming and running to the supermarket, but thinking that there's going to be another truckload of milk coming in another 8 hours, and so saying, I'm just not going to go. And, of course, what you want to do is seize what you have now. And if there is more milk, you know what? We'll swing back and get another couple of gallons and put them in the refrigerator or put them on ice. So what we have today is just under 5.5 million times 2 is 11. Take advantage of that. Number two is that we may see an evaporation of the estate tax altogether during the Trump administration, but that is estate tax. That must be distinguished from gift tax. Why? Well, if you were George Steinbrenner in 2011 and you passed away, at that point there was no estate tax, so $1 billion passed free of tax to your children. It was one of the best strategies and investments that George Steinbrenner did, the owner of the Yankees. He avoided a $500 million tax by passing away. However, the gift tax has not tracked the estate tax when there have been times about evaporating it. Why? Because the Congress feels that if we eliminate the estate tax, indeed we could, we're not going to allow people to eliminate the gift tax. Otherwise, John, me, owns a stock that's up 100%. What I'll do is I'll move that stock to my son Matthew's name. He will then sell it. The rate tax will be lower there, and then after that's done and paid, then we would move the stock back to me. So the government looks at the potential of gift tax being extremely low, even if we eliminate the estate tax. What does that mean? If you're George Steinbrenner and you die during the Trump administration when there's no tax, wonderful. Then you would die and there would be no estate tax. However, if we're eliminating estate tax but not gift tax, even if Trump eliminates the estate tax, the only people that take advantage are those that pass away. But we can't expect to move our entire estate out of our names and avoid a gift tax just because Trump eliminated the estate tax. It is likely, extremely unavailable as an option for those looking to take advantage of it. So what that goes back to is seize the gift amount we have now, which is 5.49, and then we'll worry if another truck of milk is coming into the store before the hurricane. Number three is do short and long-term graphs. What is the graph? Many of you have these in place around the country that we're working with. A graph is the idea of loaning assets to your children and then paying you back that asset over a period of years, plus a tiny bit of interest, and then any growth they get to keep for themselves. There is singularly no reason to not take advantage of graphs, because if your portfolio is growing, then at least, and you don't need the extra assets, then at least, give those assets into a trust for your kids and let them get the growth tax-free, and you then get the original principal back plus a tiny bit of interest. Why is the interest tiny? Because interest rates are low today. So please be respectful of the fact that we're trying to just peel off the onions of growth and give those to the kids and keeping the original. No tax event, a continued pattern of thinking about strategies to move net worth, growth off your balance sheet. These things will be going on for you for the rest of your life. And for some, that's 20 years, but for some of you, it's 40 or 50 years. And so the continued effort is where we need to be, irrespective of the uncertainty that takes place in the death tax. Again, that relief would only be for those that die, we believe, and certainly could be only temporary during the Trump administration. Estate freezes or installment sales. This is a very neat opportunity, and many of you have already done this. We've been with clients this week alone who've said, I want to sell portions of my company or my investment portfolio, create a partnership around that, and sell a portion of that partnership to my children, of which the income generated from that partnership and the piece that my children now own will be used to pay me back over a series of years. So if I were to sell $10 million of assets to my children and they owed us $10 million note back in the next 20 years, that $10 million, if the investments performed as we anticipate and everyone's expectations and performance will differ, but we could see $20 million. So the children owed us $10 million back, plus they owed us a little bit of interest while rates are low today. The sale of assets to our children into trust is a key piece, maybe even more so than the graphs. This week I was with the CEO of one of the largest financial houses in the country in a small group, and his people were saying, number one, do the sale into a trust and keep the note back. But if it turns out that Trump raises the gift tax exemption from 5.49 and gets approval to 10 or 15 million, not the death exemption, that would be a whole separate thing, that what we would do is that 5 or 10 million dollars of debt that our children owe us back, from the sale of the assets into the trust will forgive. And so then we've got our cake and eat it too. We sold it to the children. They owe us the original amount back. The growth is going to them. And in the meantime, we get gift tax relief. So then we forgive the indebtedness and merely compound the power of the original transaction. So please consider that. Of course, that trust will also be a grantor trust, meaning that mom and dad, the original creators of that trust, would pick up the income tax. So if we had 10 in there and over time it grew to 20, of course that growth would mean typically realized gains and there would be tax on that, but the trust would not pay it. Mom and dad would, and in effect that's an additional gift we're giving to the kid, to the children, because of this opportunity. Number five, create family limited partnerships. So many of you know that the idea of creating a partnership gives us the opportunity to wrap multiple assets in the partnership and then give the children or grandchildren or loved ones a fraction of the partnership interest, which would own all the investments inside of it. That still maintains and isolates control on the partner level, so the children are not available there. Number two is that we're allowing for a multitude of assets rather than individual ones. And then, of course, number three is that because the children do not have control and this family partnership is illiquid, we may be able to get an additional discount. So for easy math, if there were $10 million of assets in the partnership, that were worth $10 million in breakup value, we may be able to get a discount of several percentage points. Some have been as aggressive as taking 40%, because no one on the outside world would want to buy into a partnership where they had no control or where it was profoundly illiquid. The IRS and the Department of Treasury have gone after this, and this was a huge issue at the end of last year, as everybody raced to the door to get their partnerships created and then try to take their discounts. Since Trump has come in to office, there has been some concern of whether he will eliminate funding for the IRS and Treasury to review this plan and come up with a revenue ruling. Yes, Treasury is an independent entity, but we would be mistaken to think that they are not under the influence of the executive branch. So the point, though, is that the answer to this was supposed to happen in December, and even sooner than that. We've been waiting for this during the Obama administration for almost 3 years. Now, under the Trump administration, we do not see that high sense of priority to eliminate discounts. And I must emphasize to you, I was in a group where the head of Treasury was there, and she said, look, I've got 2,000 plus letters, comments that people are offering, and so I need to review all those. That may have been code, as my wife Rosemary would say on other matters, code for let's see what President Trump wants us to do, given he has a different philosophy. And in the meantime, discounting on partnerships is still part of the planning. So $12 million asset wrapped, several assets wrapped in a partnership, discounted down to 10, sold into a trust, a note is taken back. The answer here is, in the end here, you've already given yourself juice on this deal because you've sold something to your children at an amount that in breakup is worth more than the partnership itself. Of course, our view on this is that we're creating partnerships to concentrate assets, to have control isolated on the top level. Number three, to have your children qualify as what we call qualified investors, which is critical when special investment situations come up. And so having them own multiple assets inside and be a limited partner is critical. The tax benefit is an ancillary benefit and not what we're driving on. But the benefit does continue at the current time. Next issue, upstream gifting. So here, the idea is that under the current tax regime, the gains tax is over 30%. In fact, it's close to 33% when you add the Obama surtax. So what are we thinking when you add state gains tax as well when we're selling a piece of property? So suppose we own a property that's worth $4 million, and the gain on that property is $2 million. Well, when we sell it, the gain would the tax on that would be over $600,000. Now, a way to avoid that gain, other than a 1031 exchange, and we'll talk about that another day, is to have that asset included in someone in the family's estate that is closer to the end of life on the conveyor belt than the beginning. And so the strategy would be for an affluent 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old, make a gift into trust, but allow their parent, who is 70, 80, or 90, as the primary person for estate tax persons to be either the beneficiary or having the power to control the trust. When that person passes away, the asset is included in their estate. We get a step up in tax basis, and then the asset would pass down, in this instance, to maybe the decedent's grandchildren. And then the grandchildren can sell this asset, and we can avoid the basis reset to the fair market value, and we can avoid the gains tax. Upstream gifting is still critical during the 30 to 35% federal gains tax rate that we're currently undertaking. It also brings up a very, very interesting idea here for clients who have husband and wife scenario, where one of the parents, one of the spouses, is infirmed or ill. Now, historically, for years, if we knew that someone was ill, we would push assets into the ill person's name, and then on their passing, the entire asset would get stepped up in basis and then passed to the spouse. There's no tax between husband and wife, so it's passed to the spouse free of tax, and then the spouse could sell. A couple of important concepts in that. Number one, we don't often know when a spouse is going to pass away, and so those things sadly come as a surprise to everyone, and so there was no opportunity. Number two, the IRS is on to that game, and they're saying, if you give assets away to your spouse and then get those assets back, then we know your attempt was strictly to avoid paying tax and to enjoy the step up in basis. So the IRS has disallowed near-deathbed transfers in that instance. However, there are certain states in the nation, what we call community property states, that have a lot to do with what happens when one person buys a piece of property and in a marriage, does the other one, in fact, have ownership? California is one. Many of the states along the West Coast, where many of you would be listening in today, find themselves in a situation where they know that it really becomes an asset regardless of both husband and wife. So we have now gotten involved in researching and deploying a certain trust for people who do not live in community property states to take advantage of that. So a husband and wife own a piece of property that's appreciated significantly, and they're saying, look, we don't know who's going to pass away first, so what we'll do is put it into this trust, and if either one of us passes away, the other will want to sell this beach house, this residence. So now both of the husband and wife get to step up in basis because they created this trust in a community property state, even though they don't live in the community property state, and they put that asset in there. This is a brand new strategy. Certain states in the nation have changed their taxes to become community property states and are now encouraging their trust companies to woo clients from outside of that state and set the trust up inside them. We think it could be a wonderful opportunity and have taken advantage of it. Last three are charitable remainder trusts, drafting flexibility and core planning documents, and philanthropic planning. Number one, charitable remainder trust. So, given where tax rates are right now, if you were to take those assets and sell those assets, you would wind up paying significant gain on tax on the gain. So one strategy is to say I am philanthropically inclined. So my idea here is I'm going to transfer these assets into a charitable trust. I'll get a deduction for the gift into the trust. Number one, the asset will be sold inside the trust and there'll be no gains tax. And then number two. And then number three is I'll receive an annuity stream back from that sale. Good news is that if there was a 30% tax and there was a big gain, that entire amount deposited into the trust will not suffer any shrinkage because it's in a charitable entity, number one. Number two is that continued investment inside that charitable entity will not be subject to tax either or minimal. And number three, though, is that I'll receive an annuity stream back from that fully appreciated amount, no reduction. And so it puts us in a position where we're having a bit of our cake and eating it too. Does it position us as well initially as it would if we were to just sell the asset on our own and not put it into a trust and pay the tax? Short term, that will always, under the current regime, be a better strategy, sell and pay the tax. But if we're looking at this as a longer term strategy and seeing that two things come out of this, that the growth on the sale would be tax free, that we can get an annuity stream back, and that we do get a deduction for upfront. It's not the same as a pure 100% gift because we are getting annuity stream back. That compounding opportunity is significant. Plus, in the end, the asset would go to a charity. Now, many of our clients now are creating foundations, and they're saying, could my family foundation be the charity? And the answer is absolutely. And that foundation then would be what you would then have you and your children, after the charitable trust term ends, would then be making distributions out of the foundation at that point to the charities that you deem are valuable. The last two are drafting for flexibility. So if the step-up in basis is eliminated by Congress, meaning that if we eliminate estate tax, the discussion now is, well, if there's no estate tax, how do we allow all these people who have all these low basis, real estate, private equity, concentrated positions in public companies that they had through work and otherwise, how do we think that that's fair, that they should on death get a step up in tax basis and also pay no estate tax? And so the intelligentsia have said, even if we wind up getting an elimination of the estate tax during the Trump era, a big if, we can imagine that on death there could very well be a forced or deemed sale of the assets for tax purposes and you'd have to pay the gain. Would the gain be less? That gains tax be less than the estate tax under the strategy that I'm discussing? Absolutely. Canada has a similar program, and as you guys know, many of you with international assets, and we do a ton of work outside the country, the answer is that many of these countries that don't have an estate tax have what we call a deemed sale on debt and say all that gain that you have, well, now the tax will be paid on it. Others say, no, the tax won't be due on death, but that when you sell that asset, the gain will be all the way back to the original date of the purchase of those assets. So for us, it will be important to be respectful of that potential and talk about assets and maybe swapping assets during lifetime and in trust that you have now, and working through the best possible gains scenario that we can have. It may also be the opportunity to buy life insurance to pay for the gains tax that your children would have to pay. But for sure, the future tax changes in family circumstances, it will be critical for a trust to include powers of appointment where we can direct where these assets will go and who should benefit from or be penalized for the tax rate that we have. Last point, and that is philanthropic planning. So many, rather than making gifts directly to charity and surrendering any say or control as to the application, we are big fans of creating foundations. We love it because you get the tax deduction up front, number one. Number two, the assets compound in the foundation without tax. Number three, expenses can be expensed against the foundation, maybe even travel for the annual meeting. Number four is you're including your children on this very important piece, and you are creating an opportunity to get a look into, are the children playing well in the sandbox? Are your daughters and sons-in-law resentful that there is an annual meeting? Can we get a little bit of a whisper as to what the family will look like as they work together when we are no longer living, when you are no longer living? So we had a very important meeting this week where, more than anything, the client said, get this foundation created. I'm making significant gifts anyway. I can gift appreciated assets. I can get a deduction on the entire appreciated value. And I'm looking at this as the first dry run on the track with my children working together and seeing how my children's spouses are as well. We think it's a phenomenal opportunity to continue to support charity, but not to have to get into the greater issues of managing the totality of your estate with your children. So in closing, please be aware that tax reform during the Trump administration has already created uncertainty and may change the rules of the game. So it is essential for you to stay posted with us on these changes. But it does not mean that you should not get out there and mow the grass and continue to know that there are, your portfolio is growing and that you should be taking advantage of that and not waiting for those opportunities that may or may not come down the road. And when they come, to feel that that would mean that you're done on your planning because they may be temporary.